to the second half of We the People Radio. It is August 4th, 2024. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Kunduff.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, Aaron. How
are
you?
Do we have a sponsor today?
Yes, we do, Aaron.
Thanks, Bill.
Sure. Our sponsor this hour...
kind of threw you a little bit, huh?
Oh, not really. I'm a professional. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They have tractors, mowers. They even have the electric John Deere mowers. Thank you, California.
Boo.
Can't buy the gas ones anymore. But yeah, they do have some nice electric mowers up there you can get. Go up and see them. They do parts, sales, service. They do it all. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, right between Oasis Road and Pine Grove exits off of I-5. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. And you can also catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, back to our favorite topic.
So, Libby,
one of us is chomping at the bit.
Yeah, well,
barely made it through the 5-minute news break.
Well,
okay, go ahead.
So I have a personal story because we were talking about cancer over the break and marijuana use, and I will tell you, Libby, that my sister-in-law had cancer at 39, had a double mastectomy, came back at 41, had permeated her entire body. End of life, my brother decided to try high-potency cannabis on her, and he said for the last 2 weeks of her life that she did not know where she was. She was just stoned out, and she left this life without really, I don't know, having any sense of being alive anymore, and that was because of high-potency. That's what high-potency cannabis did for her, and he said he made a mistake. He should have never have done it. He should have stayed in traditional medicine, and he thinks it would have been much better for her in her life. So my question to you has to do with antagonists. And we have Narcan for opioid abuse. We have Anabuse for alcohol abuse. Are we on any kind of cusp of getting anything that could be used for... I know Dr. Finn has talked about the use of some antipsychotic drugs.
You mean like if they're basically overdosing?
Yeah, if they're overdosing. Do you have any opinion on that?
No, I first of all, I'm so sorry to hear about your sister. That's a very terrible story, sad. But anyway, we don't have anything that would reverse the effects of marijuana. I mean, we do have drugs that reverse the effects of benzos and, like you said, opiates. But no, now people are using antipsychotics for people that develop schizophrenic psychotic symptoms, yes, or even the really severe nausea, vomiting, that is getting antipsychotic medication, but that isn't like really reversing the effects of marijuana. Right now, the only thing we've got is time. I mean, it has to get eliminated from the system. And that takes a while because it's fat soluble, so it sits in your fat. And since the brain is full of fat, it really does sit in your brain.
So you can't flush the system with any kind of liquid that's going to flush that out of the fat cells of your body. So it really just is time, right?
Right.
You can't give them pineapple juice. That's not going to work.
Well, and I'm curious, Libby, for people who, because you have a lot of these people who, you know, they think, you know, smoking pot is still like it was in the 60s and it's no big deal, blah, blah, blah. And so maybe they've kind of gotten back into that. Maybe they were into that years ago. I'm always blown away at how many grown-ups are doing this when you think about it being kids, but it's a lot of adults. And then they move into the things that didn't exist back then, like the edibles and the things that have a higher potency THC. How many people do you think are actually aware that those are really different? It isn't just a different delivery system.
I don't think people are aware at all.
That's what I was afraid of.
I continue to be requested to educate legislators. And in every time I've done that, they're kind of blown away by, they didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. And I think it's because all they've listened to is people from the industry,
right,
who never talk about the downsides.
Well, they make it sound like it's all the same thing, just some of them are, you know, shaped like candy, and some of them are, you know, all these different, it's just a delivery system difference for the exact same thing, and that's really not true.
Right, and this is why I'm so concerned about the attempt to reschedule marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, which then implies that, yes, it is medicine, and does that apply to all of cannabis? I mean, they haven't spelled that out, and so does that, can you then say that vaping 60% hash oil is medicine? I don't think you can say that, because there's no research supporting that. But that's kind of where we're going, which is very scary, I think.
By rescheduling to Schedule 3 drug, does that put more restrictions on these pot shops? Like, can we put this quote-unquote marijuana medicine in the pharmacies and have dosages? And, I mean, is there a way that we can control this more if we reschedule? Because that's one of the arguments.
Libby, can it actually pass FDA approval?
Right.
Real FDA approval.
No.
All right.
Right. No, that's the problem.
Yeah. Right.
They've never approved any plant that I know of.
No.
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, and I think, you know, we're in California, Colorado's suffering. Even in New York, all of these new states that have, quote-unquote, legalized it are finding out that the marijuana grown in these, it did not do anything for the illegal market. The illegal market just exploded. And
flourished, yes.
And now your marijuana is laced with God only knows what. And there's no controls. There was no built-in what ifs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And all the testing and stuff we're finding out, because we have all these illegal grows up here, and you know they're pulling over, a truck with 1,000 pounds of processed marijuana, and the guy tells them, "I'm taking it to a collective down in Long Beach."
Right.
So it's going right into a store that's supposed to be, you know,
tested. And we're testing it here.
Yeah.
Criminally, and we're finding that it's
loaded with chemicals,
pesticides. So, Libby, here's a sad statistic, and I want to know whether you ever treated any older Americans with cannabis use disorder, because in 2023, 8.4%, and it's up 0.4% from the year before, of Americans over the age of 65 are now reporting they are using cannabis. Did you ever have the opportunity to treat any older Americans?
Yes, and very sad. Actually, this is something I got educated myself, because I stupidly, in one case I'm thinking about, didn't ask. Well, I didn't ask the right question. So this is a gentleman that I got referred to. He was 82 years old, and he was having problems with anxiety. And so he was referred to me to help him with anxiety. So I asked the questions, do you use any alcohol, tobacco, or drugs? And he denied all of them. Never been a smoker, he doesn't drink, and he's not used any drugs. So I just went with that and found out that he had been on Valium for 5 years at increasing doses. And I decided that was probably contributing mostly to his anxiety, because he was now dependent on it and was wearing off. And the other thing is, he had also been put on 2 dementia drugs. And I really thought that was maybe related to the benzodiazepine use. And so I convinced him that we would work slowly to taper him off the Valium. And you know, we worked on that. And we did. We were very successful in slowly tapering him off. I was teaching him skills on how to manage his anxiety. And we were making progress. But not completely. I mean, he still had a great deal of anxiety, but getting off the benzos, he was able to get off the 2 dementia drugs. So which was really great. And so anyway, I'm still working, you know, on the anxiety issue. And my MA, I have a new MA, and she's really good. And so she's asking these questions, and she just said, "And how are you sleeping, sir?" And his response was, "Two hits off a Burmese cushion, I'm good to go."
Yikes. And, but that didn't qualify as drugs in his mind?
No. And I said, "I thought you told me you didn't use any drugs." He said, "I don't. That's my medicine." And I said, "Okay, what do you mean it's your medicine?" And what it turned out was, 5 years ago, his primary care doctor told him he was going to have to take him off the opiates he'd been on for years because that was inappropriate anymore. And so they took him off the opiates. He had had chronic pain issues for a very long time. And they took him off the opiates. And so he on his own went to a dispensary, and they just suggested he use marijuana for his pain. And so he started using it, and that's why he got anxiety. So
that's why
he got put on Valium. So then I'm getting this whole history, and I decide, boy, I really need to be paying more attention to this gentleman. So I got his medical records from the hospital, and he had been in the ER 10 times and got a CAT scan every single time for severe abdominal pain and nausea, vomiting. And that's not anything I had gotten the history of. So finally, we were able to, you know, get people together and realize this guy has cannabis hyperemesis syndrome. He has all kinds of problems related to his marijuana use. Boy, that was a real eye-opener for me. And so after that, I was very clearly asking everyone I saw, not just about drugs, but specifically about marijuana or cannabis, THC, CBD, any kind of variation thereof.
In any shape or form. Yeah.
Yeah. And I started seeing a lot of elderly people who were having significant problems with their medications not working. And so that's why I end up getting referred a lot of people for problems with anxiety and depression who were had been diagnosed and treated by their primary care physician and given psychiatric medication. And so they would come in to see me, and I'd say, "Why am I seeing you?" And they say, "Well, because my medication isn't working. You need to give me a better medication." And so then I'd get this history of what they're using, basically marijuana. And I had to explain to them, "I think this is why your medication isn't working, because..." And even CBD has major interactions pharmacologically with medications.
And that's so about somewhere between 400 and 600 drugs today. Is that correct, Libby?
Exactly.
The interaction with CBD?
Yes.
Yeah.
And marijuana, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have it on every corner, and it's supposed to be, you know, it's like very...
Right.
Yeah. Supposed to be just a nothing burger.
I'm curious, with this gentleman, did he feel that the marijuana use was the culprit, or did he...
He didn't even tell her he was doing it.
Well, no, he initially was very resistant to believing anything I was saying about it. But he did finally come around and did believe that it did. And that's been my experience with most everybody I've worked with that has cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome. They initially just cannot believe it, and it takes a whole lot of work to convince them that the marijuana could be the culprit.
When he got off of all that, was it like, did the light bulb go on for him?
Sadly, I don't know, because this is happening right at the height of COVID, and I lost track of him because he didn't have the ability to do visual, like, you know, online
Zoom, yeah,
things, because he didn't have a computer. He wasn't computer literate, and
Libby, I have a I'm interested in your 90-day study. We really didn't let you take us through the entire 90 days. So what metric did you use for success of the program, and what kind of recidivism did you have from or people reusing after they left your program? Do you have any of those numbers?
And then we'll have to do that after the break because I just know, I just looked down, it's 1:20. Let's take a really quick break. We're going to come back and answer all of that with our guest, Dr. Libby Stout. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I could talk to her for hours.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around. I wanna feel its sway, wanna feel its sway, put some feel good in my soul. Drink a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Want a little more right.
And the monkey man were hard up for cash. They stayed up all night selling cocaine and hash to an undercover cop who had a sister named Jan. For reasons unexplained, she loved the monkey man. He was a Boy Scout boss, he went to be a man. Found out the hard way, nobody gives a damn. He knew that Nathan Freeman just across the Jersey line. Hopped into a stolen cop on Highway 99 when the walls came down.
I just play that for you. Okay, you want to refresh your question?
Well, I was dancing over in the corner.
We were going to leave that to their imagination.
So, Libby, did you get my questions, or do I need to restate them for you? Okay, let go.
Just 2 minutes to think about it.
Yeah. So basically, we ended up doing an outcome study because we were always queried about, you know, what our outcomes were because it was a very expensive program. And so what I used as, you know, good criteria is if you finish the program. And that's where we did really well for several years. Like 10 years in a row, we had 80% successfully completing, meaning they were there for the full 90 days. But then of those people that completed during a 1 year period, we followed 140 people for a year after treatment. And it was a really good study because we had quantitative data because these were all people that were on probation. So they have probation officers who were getting urine drug screens. And then we talked. So once a month for 12 months, we contacted the probation officer, the treatment provider, the patient, and a family member to get an update. And what we found out of those 140 people was that we had 54% sober and doing well at the end of the year. And that was pretty phenomenal for this population because we had been mandated to treat the people who failed everything else. And so most of the people had been in an average of three previous inpatient treatment programs where they, you know, relapsed immediately after treatment. And what I found was most of those people had been in a program where they allowed them to smoke. That was a major difference in this program. And I really think it's because nicotine affects the brain just like the other drugs do. It makes it very difficult to learn anything new because it's shrinking your hippocampus. And so in a program where you're not using any addictive substances, your brain has a chance to recover and heal. And in fact, neuroscience shows that it takes 90 days for a stem cell to grow and differentiate in your hippocampus. So if you've been suppressing that for a long time and then you stop, then it takes 90 days for your hippocampus to recover. And I think that's what AA has known intuitively forever because, you know, what does AA say but 90 and 90, meaning, you know, if you want to quit drinking, you have to go to a meeting every day for 90 days, and you're going to start getting it. The reason why I don't think AA works for most people initially is because it is a cup of coffee in one hand and a cigarette in the other hand with sugar in it.
And a lot of sugar.
Learning new things. But anyway, our recidivism rate, and that's what got us continued funding. Because when I presented that to the Joint Budget Committee at the state capital, they basically said, oh my God, we can't get, you know, we can't stop this program, because they were always trying to close the program because it was very expensive. And that's when they agreed that they needed to fund the program, and that's actually where we ended up getting medical marijuana tax proceeds to fund the program. And the program actually had a line item in the budget for the program. So it was a very popular program. Judges in the state were really happy about it. They sent lots of people there. So I'm really sad it doesn't exist anymore. But some of the things that were so important, because we would ask the people that we were following up, you know, what helped you? What do you think helped you the most in the program? And the one class that they felt that was helpful the most was what we called cue exposure response prevention. And this is a technique that has very mixed reviews in the literature, but I think it is the most effective thing to use in treatment. The problem is you cannot use it in a program where people are allowed to smoke. And what that is we basically did not allow them to go the first month. The first month, they had to go to ear acupuncture. And after the first month, then they had to start going to this cue exposure class. And what we would do is, you know, the theory behind it is it's very easy inpatient to say, oh, I'm never using again. This is what people say in jail all the time. Oh, I'm never using again. Right. But because they haven't done anything to change their thinking, they are immediately triggered by all the old wiring in their brain, and they use the minute they get out. And so what we do is we expose them to things. So we would bring in all kinds of stuff like rigs and needles and foil and pipes and bottles of alcohol and all kinds of things that then they would have, they would be able to expose to. They couldn't use, they could smell it, they could hold it, but they couldn't taste it or anything. And you can see it working because they're getting really sick. And because dopamine is very nausea provoking. And so you can see people getting sick to their stomach because they're getting a dopamine release from this. And then we would make them hold it for a period of time. And then we would use refusal skills to back out of it, to walk away from it. And so that they could then see that you can, what we would call, ride the wave, that you can be exposed to this and you don't have to give in to it.
What's a refusal skill? What does that mean?
Well, many of them. I mean, basically, you know, just saying no is one, but that's really hard to do. And we would make them come up with them. Like, I had a good example was I had a young lady who, because we also did guided imagery, and so they had to come up with a little scenario. And her scenario was she was going to get out of treatment and go to her town where she lived, and her brother owned a bar. And so she was going to sit at the bar and get club soda. And so she's sitting at the bar getting club soda, but she has to go to the bathroom, and she has a bottle of vodka in her purse. And so she's sitting on the toilet and opens her purse, and she's smelling the bottle of vodka. And then I said, well, just sit there for a while. Don't drink it. You know, just think about it. What is it you really want? And then after a certain period of time, I said, okay, now you have to get out of there. You cannot drink it. What are you going to do? And she goes, I don't know what to do. And I said, you're in a bathroom. And she goes, you want me to throw it in the toilet? And I said, well,
it's right there.
Yeah, I know. And it was something that hadn't even occurred to her, which was just fascinating. I mean, we had all kinds of experiences like that. But the more they do it, the more they see, yes, I can have that feeling that I really need it, I really want it, but I don't have to give in to it. That's a really powerful treatment.
That's a cool idea, actually.
Libby, what about...
I know, but if you that group was an hour and a half long. If you did that group and then you went out and had a cigarette, you would just be reinforcing everything you just did in that group, and it would be a total waste.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think the research is so bad on it, because most of the research, they never controlled for smoking.
Libby, what about some of the studies that I'm reading about reemergence of psychosis years later from heavy cannabis use dependence. Do you have any thoughts about that?
No, because I actually haven't seen that, but I wouldn't be surprised. I have definitely seen it with hallucinogens, and you know that's a really common phenomena with hallucinogens. It's called post hallucinogenic flashback, and since high potency marijuana is a hallucinogen, basically, I can see where that might be happening to people. I've done that. I've had that experience of people using LSD where they had really bad trips in the past one time, and then they quit and hadn't used in years, and now they start having flashbacks where they can't. It's very uncomfortable. Like, I had one person who couldn't look at anything for very long because the wall started moving and pictures would come out of the wall at him and all that.
Even when he wasn't on drugs?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hadn't used in a long time. And so that, and I was struggling with what do we do about that. I ended up treating quite a few people that had those with anticonvulsants. I mean, that's totally off label, but that was the only thing I could come up with that might be helpful. Mm-hmm. And in some people, it was helpful.
In your 90-day program, obviously, you would have to treat for more than just cannabis use disorder. That might be the primary, one of the primary drugs, but. But you're treating for a lot of long, deep-seated psychological problems, and they're getting intensive group therapy. Is that part of the program as well?
Oh yeah, and the biggest piece is trauma work. I mean, we had a very powerful trauma group where people would first individually they had an individual therapist who would do trauma work with them, and then they had to write their entire trauma history, and then up to them whether they wanted to share it, but often they would share it with their peers in a group setting, get a lot of really good feedback. And I think that's like crucial. You have to do trauma work. You cannot expect anybody to recover if you haven't dealt with the underlying reasons why people use. And so, yeah, trauma work is a big piece of that.
That makes sense. All right. So I've been patiently waiting because...
we had no idea. She looked perfectly normal.
In the last hour, we talked a little bit about spousal abuse and domestic partner abuse. And I want to know, has there been any studies or anything that when we talk about child abuse... and especially during COVID when schools didn't have the opportunity to interact with these kids and be able to report child abuse, did you see an uptick in child abuse because of marijuana use?
Yeah, you are so right on that. That absolutely needs to be done. Very few states are actually collecting this data. I have found it very hard to find. I have found it in Texas and Arizona. And what they're actually collecting data on are child fatality cases in abuse and neglect situations. And like the data from Texas is showing that the number one drug present in the perpetrator is marijuana.
Hmm.
The stuff from Arizona is they're actually looking at the toxicology of the child and the perpetrator and finding that number one drug, I think, in the... child is marijuana and opiates, and one drug in the perpetrator of marijuana and meth, I think. I can't remember exactly.
Right.
But so few states are actually even looking at this. And I think that that needs to change. I mean, people have to be getting, and first of all, they have to get the right history, not just marijuana,
right.
Yes or no.
Right.
It's what kind of marijuana, what's the THC potency, how often are they using?
Right. And do you think they just don't do it because they don't want to know? Or they, you know, like, because we know the marijuana industry is so powerful, there's so much money there. Do you think they're making it harder for us to do that?
Oh, yeah. I think that's why legislators are afraid of addressing this. I think a lot of them get money from the industry.
Right.
They don't want to go against the industry. We had that problem in Colorado where we actually had to get a law to mandate that the coroners would report THC in, you know, suicide cases, and what we're trying to get in all violent situations. But I actually had a discussion with a coroner at one point. I said, "You're not reporting THC. Do not collect it." And he said, "Oh yeah, we collect it. We've just been told not to report it." And I said, "Who told you that?"
Yeah.
And then he told me it was the Department of Public Health. Well, I said, "I'd like to see that in writing," and I never saw that in writing. So I don't know the real story there.
Well, because you hear the stories of these kids bringing these products to schools, and I'm talking young children bringing, you know, candy edibles and sharing.
Like elementary school?
Oh, yeah. And sharing it with classmates, and they're all getting sick. And it's like, do they just don't want to report any of this? Like, this is not normal.
I don't know. Denver Health is the number one public health hospital in Denver. And they took marijuana off of their drug screen. And so I asked somebody who works there, why would they do that? And his response, and I don't know if this is the official response, it's just what he said was, well, we just figured everybody's using it, so, you know, it's kind of a waste of money.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Wow.
Gosh, yeah, everybody's speeding, too, but they still have signs on the highway.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that, you know, Colorado being the epicenter of all this legalization for marijuana, they would have the most information to share about the effects, the long-term effects, you know, the medical effects, everything. I mean, if you wanted to know, what's going on with this drug, go to Colorado and pull some information. But if they're not even collecting it.
Yeah,
that's
a little snag there.
That's a problem.
We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, Libby, I'd like to know what your recommendation would be on testing. We're always getting, we have people who want testing for driving under the influence, all that stuff, but the fat-soluble molecule problem makes it harder. You know, it's not like alcohol. There's no fast test, but you work with this enough and you deal with all these folks. If you were going to run scans for this, I'd be curious if you could recommend what you would choose. We will be right back for that snazzy answer from Dr. Libby Stout. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Floating side by side. He looked in the mirror, and his eyes were clear for the first time.
Hi everybody, RC with Tobacco and Brew, and this month's Cigar of the Humidor, El Pulpo by AJ Fernandez. Receiving a 94 rating, El Pulpo is outstanding, balanced, layered, bold, or just a few words used to describe the powerful character of such a cigar from the factory of AJ Fernandez. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Taggart and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no side effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult to treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by, Get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
Hey, Reading, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Reading on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Just a little FYI. It's a good thing we're on radio. Officer Joe's got the moves.
Weird science. How appropriate for Dr. Libby.
That's why I thought. I thought that would be fun. Weird science just seemed to fit. I don't even remember what I asked her before the break. We were going to come back and she was going to answer it. Libby, do you remember what my thought was?
Yes, you're testing.
Oh, yeah. The testing.
Yeah.
It's a ticket.
What I think needs to happen is we need to be using more of the saliva testing. So, like, when people are stopped on the road, you know, getting saliva, because that seems to be a little more accurate initially. But people have to recognize that you can't be looking just for Delta-9 THC, because it is metabolized really rapidly, especially if the person is smoking it. And it goes... But then you're looking for the metabolites, like the Delta-9 or the 11-hydroxy-Delta-9. These are metabolites that are very active, psychoactive. People, they can be around for some time. Well, yeah, they can be around for some time, and they can be effective.
Dr. Libby, we just lost you.
We lost you. She went into the cone of silence.
So let me talk about, because I do know about...
Oh, we're getting her back from the cone of silence?
Yes.
Okay.
I do know about roadside testing. L.A. County, where I'm from, did a test of... DUI stops, and so they, you know, you'd see the cones out, they'd wave you in, and they used what was called a Draeger 3000, and this device did take that saliva and was able in about 10 minutes to analyze it, and then, but the problem was is they had to come up with a standard, and in California
we don't have a standard.
We don't have a standard, so they had to use their ability as a drug recognition expert, DRE. They had to use everything else, and then they would put the and this was just a, you know, they were testing out this device. There were other companies, a number of them, were trying to come up with using breath samples, but then COVID stopped all that. These companies went into COVID testing devices and got out of the marijuana. And since federal legalization may be on the cusp, they're thinking that maybe they don't want to be involved in that. I don't know. But the first company that develops a roadside successful test is going to be a multi-gazillion dollar company.
Yeah, I bet. Because it, with no standard, I mean, there's no, you can't get in trouble for that. So what do they do?
We tried for 2 nanograms. That's what the California District Attorney's Association, 2 nanograms per liter of blood. The industry came in and said, oh, no, that's way too low. We want 5. And that's where it stopped. They were not successful. They didn't get anything through the legislature. And so we
have
no standard.
So if they decide that they're not a drunk driver, but they are a drugged driver, so like the things that we've learned, like they can't cross their eyes, their eyelids flutter when they like stand there with their hands out,
right,
and they can't touch their nose and all these different things. So
their tongue is green.
Oh, yeah, their tongue is green. Yeah, that's a dead giveaway. So, if they're exhibiting all those symptoms...
Blood test.
But you can't measure it...
Blood test.
So they, do they take them in and do a blood test?
Yeah, but the problem with that in California is that blood test is $75. It takes over 90 days to get it back from an overworked crime lab. By that time, the case has already been adjudicated through the court system, and it's just a mess.
And most DA offices won't prosecute.
Yeah, won't prosecute.
Because it's too hard to prove. They'll go for alcohol every time.
To me, that's why DREs are really important.
Yep.
Okay. So what do you see going forward? I mean, if we have little kids getting habituated to all this stuff because their parents are leaving, you know, stuff that looks like candy, real candy, sitting around on the counters and whatnot, and this is all just becoming part of the culture, and they're telling you, like, well, there's no point in worrying about it because everybody's doing it anyway. What do you see being the tipping point, Libby, from a medical standpoint? Because I think that's what will do it, just like the cancer did with cigarettes.
Right. Well, even alcohol.
Well, I still think it's cognition and judgment, because that's what's so thrown off. You know, all these really horrible accidents, crashes, basically, that, you know, people are driving the wrong way and running into people head on. That's so much the brain not functioning. And, you know, I think that can happen on any level of marijuana. It just depends on the individual. And that's why I think that, yes, I think we need blood on everybody if we could get it. But the point you made is very clear. Yeah, it takes a while, and it's expensive, and it takes, you know, it's too long. And that's why I'm hoping that they come up with something better. But in the meantime, the DREs, I think we need more of them. They're not a lot.
False alarm. We still have 10 minutes.
And you know what, Libby, that we're finding, too, is that in our city, or our county right here, we were doing the probation program for victim impact, and we would have a questionnaire. And these people were the offenders would come through, about 100 a month. They were very honest because they knew we weren't law enforcement. They didn't have, there wasn't going to be any penalties attached to this, and they needed their certificate for probation to get, you know, to get their probation completed. So they were really honest. And I would say prior to legalization or 2014, probably maybe, I don't know, it was pretty small, a single-digit percentage of people admitted to poly drug use, alcohol and marijuana as part of their DUI. After legalization, it exploded. So now we're seeing that so many people are using alcohol and marijuana during their DUI, and the problem is for our officers, when the officers stop them and they give them a PAS device, a portable alcohol screening device, they blow over .08. They're already under the law, 23-152A, our DUI law. They're already, they'll be found guilty. So they will not test for marijuana. But in most of those cases, I'd say a majority of them, marijuana is now being used too. So we don't have the statistical evidence that we need to develop to show that this is the problem.
And they don't test for it because they've already got one thing that's a crime.
And why spend $75 and wait for the 6 months?
Well, and doesn't alcohol exasperate marijuana use in the effects of marijuana?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I've understood. So,
absolutely.
What does it do? I mean, just out of curiosity, for those of us who don't do all this stuff. So, if you're a habitual marijuana user and then you throw alcohol to it, what happens?
You're higher.
Yeah.
You're fired.
It's just really affecting more of your brain, for sure.
Right.
More bad decisions.
Right. Delayed reactions, you know, your thought processes, like, oh, I'm going the wrong way in traffic, but, you know, I'll just go up here a little bit and get off the freeway.
I'll sit at the stoplight longer.
Yeah.
I always wonder about that when they don't go right away. I'm like, what is going on there? So in Colorado, since you guys have been dealing with this even longer than we have in California, I'm sure you work with people in states that have not legalized. What do you see as are they doing better, or is it still a mess there?
Well, so many states are now legalized, and you can go across the border and get it. So,
right.
I think it's increasing everywhere. But we definitely have seen a significant problem in Colorado. And, you know, that's why I'm giving a talk for the DUII National Organization in Washington, actually in 2 weeks. And I really talk about all the ways marijuana can affect you, from cognition to psychosis to violence, in terms of affecting driving. And so I Googled road rage, and I was just amazed that the very first thing that came up was a marijuana dispensary advertising marijuana for road rage.
So you can have more of it?
Yes. No, so like saying that how it helped you with all the things that happened to you when you have road rage.
Oh, wow.
And this is, shows exactly the difference between what the industry does and what science shows.
Right.
Because then I went on, you know, Ovid, or, you know, I looked at PubMed to see what comes up with cannabis and road rage. And there are studies, and I found a study showing that cannabis is the number one cause of road rage.
Oh, yeah, I'm
no
sure.
No kidding, yeah.
So they're basically encouraging people to...
have more road rage.
Well, have, you know, participate in marijuana while they're driving to...
Well, then there's that.
I mean, that is nuts.
Well, and nowadays, if you pull up to a stop sign and you kind of look around and you might see someone lighting a joint in the car next to you, oh, and guess what? Their kids are in the back seat, strapped in. You know,
exactly.
Hopefully they're strapped
or
in.
Not, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, they just don't think anything about it because it's not cigarettes.
Libby, one of the things that we're working on here in California, and specifically this county, and hopefully in the next year, is a social host ordinance. And we got that passed for alcohol.
What does that mean?
So the social host ordinance, I'll let Kathy explain it, and then we'll talk about marijuana.
So a social host is you hold the parents or the owners of the home accountable for supplying the alcohol to underage drinkers. So that's what a social host ordinance is all about. We got one passed in the city of Redding, and now we would like to address it on a countywide basis. And that's only because, you know, so many parents believe, you know, oh, it's okay if they drink. They're right here at my house. I'm not going to give them the keys to their car, blah, blah, blah. But then you have binge drinking. There's so many other things that go on.
Does that ordinance include marijuana, or is it just
that,
alcohol?
No. Right now it's just alcohol. But, boy, I'd like to see the marijuana become part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And tie our bars, and now we have places that are dispensing cannabis where you can go and smoke it, to have the civil liability come back to
right.
that dispensary or cannabis bars.
Right.
That's important, too, because that's just putting more stone drivers on our streets. 3,000-pound bullets, you know, being shot at all of us.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody just stops. It's like, okay, let's take that in, because we're all going to go out and get in our cars, right? But it does explain a lot. You do see some of this stuff, and you think, what the heck is that person doing? And
it could
be almost anything.
Well, it used to be at nighttime. You know, the bars would get out, and, you know, 2 and 5 drivers would be under the influence. You know, it approaches 3 and 5 drivers. But now it's during the day, because all these people smoke cannabis during the day and go to work, and we can no longer ask employers about their cannabis use in California. It's not a disqualifying job. You know, hey, are you smoking cannabis? No, I don't want you. Unless they have some kind of federal truck driving mandate or some federal mandate for operating equipment.
Law enforcement.
Law enforcement, right.
But even like my grandson who just got his Class A, I'm like all about it. Because Class A driver's license is more restrictive than any type of...
Sure.
And that's his livelihood, so...
And they test them for that, or they just require that...
Oh, yeah, they'll test them. Okay. The employer will test them.
With a Class A, if you have an accident, you're...
Automatically.
Automatically, you're tested.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
and you know, Libby, one of the things I learned from your state and your HIDA report, your high-intensity drug activity report, is that people who use cannabis have more on-the-job injuries, they use more sick time, and they have higher rates of internal employee theft. So there's nothing good that you can say about cannabis for our society, as far as I'm concerned. Any comments on that?
I agree totally. And I heard a presentation on what I think is a very cool thing, which is on an iPad, a cognitive test that you could have your employees do, like pre-employment, where you know that they're not using any drugs, and so they have they have to do well on this cognitive test on the tablet, and then when there's an incident, you have them do the test again.
To compare.
And I think that sounds like a great idea.
Do you have that test, Libby? Because if you do, I'm going to be emailing you for it.
Yeah, we
want it.
I'm going to find it.
Well, no, the person who was presenting this is Joe McGuire.
Oh, Joe McGuire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if it actually became something that people are actually using, but she was presenting it at this conference, and I thought, boy, that is such a smart idea.
That is a smart idea. Well, we've got like a minute left or so. So before we get cut off, because this happens every single time, I've decided that my new thing is to thank you ahead of time. So then when we cut you off at the end, then we just cut you off at the end. So thank you so much for coming on. Now we can have the last minute. So if you had something to, I mean, you do so much rehab with people and all that. If you had a parent with a kid who was using this, a sister with a sibling, you know, if you were going to maybe give somebody a heads up on a tool that might work to help them get a family member or friend away from all this, any silver bullets? Should have told you I was going to ask you the silver bullet with 30 seconds left.
I wish I had them, but like for cannabis hyperemesis syndrome, I just refer people to the Facebook page, Recovery from Cannabinoid Hyperemesis. It is phenomenal, and they help people more than anybody. So if you just go on Facebook and put in Recovery from Cannabinoid Hyperemesis, this is a group that has expanded dramatically, and they help each other. And so I think that's a great way for people to learn more about it, because it's people that have had it, that are dealing with it, and what they do to deal with it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's kind of great. All right, I'll link that on there. And now we have to unceremoniously cut you off, so good thing I thanked you ahead of time. We will be back next week. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at We the People Radio.
You're my rock star, Libby.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.